Item 15, the last item of the day, which is Initiative I-1401, Protection of Risk Species, briefing by Chief and Deputy Chief.
Well, thank you, Commission Chair.
I just want to thank you for your professionalism today, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Initiative 1401, back up just a little bit. Steve Crown with the enforcement program. I'm the chief. To my left is Deputy Chief Mike Sensi. Last November, voters overwhelmingly voted for Initiative 1401 in all counties. Comparable laws have been passed in New York, New Jersey, and California. The one that passed in this state through voter initiative was probably the most comprehensive and covers more species than the other states. Specifically, 1401 bans the trade in parts of elephants, rhinos, lions, tigers, pangolins, had to look that one up, leopards, cheetahs, sharks, rays, and marine turtles. We have other statutory authority through the State Lacey Act where we're able to address importation from other states, other countries, illegally gotten animals, and that's been a benefit to us. But this is a little bit different. We're talking about the trade of parts. We're talking about not live animals. We're actually talking about proceeds from those animals. So the bulk of the statutory changes within Initiative 1401 are contained within RCW 7715 135. There's some other changes as it relates to our rewards account, 7715-420, that is the wildlife penalty assessment. They did some changes within there to address some of the sales and seizures of some of these parts as they come into the state of Washington. You see the two icons here, it specifically addresses the subspecies. So you heard the list, and you know that there's a whole bunch of different species of shark. There's different species of rays and sea turtle. But specific those that are endangered and listed within CITES, and that is the acronym for the Convention of International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. And also the other one that causes a little bit of consternation is the red list from the IUCN, which is the International Union of Conservation of Natural Nature and Natural Resources, which is more of an NGO than it really is a specific governmental organization. And Deputy Chief Sensi had one of his first calls the other day about sharks, and I started looking at the list of how many Mako sharks subspecies there are, long fin, short fin, and which one actually is the one that they're trying to protect. The point being is this is a new mission. This is a mission that requires additional training. It requires a lot of intensive understanding of not only our state law as it exists, but also federal laws. Most are not indigenous species. Talk a little bit about the cute little guy on the right there. A pangolin, that's the one I had to look up. These species, there are exceptions within the new law, such as You can trade in bona fide antiquities, and that means that the overall amount of ivory, if you will, in the particular item has to be 15% or less of the overall volume, or there's the 100-year exception where you could show documentation that that particular item that you possess and you want to sell is over 100 years old. So it does become a little bit difficult for us to fully meet that mission that has been sent to us. We do have some species that do come into the state of Washington, and with the difference, tropical water flows, excuse me, I can't think of it right off the top of my head, but the Gulf streams that come up through the state of Washington, you do get some of these critters, and natural death occurs. They wash up on the beach. Particularly this last fall, I happened to be down at Long Beach, and right there on the shore is a shark. Now, the teeth had already been removed from that thing, but did they enter up into any sort of market? Well, then you have to have the expertise, once they have entered into the market, to know what critter that came from. And the other piece about that is the dating of a particular item. We don't have that expertise within Washington State. That is going to have to be something that we send out to the Ashland lab through U.S. Fish and Wildlife. But there kind of has to be a federal nexus even to get any of that looked at by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We talked a little bit about the pangolin. The pangolin comes from India. It's a food source, but it's also something that a lot of articles are made from the hide of those things. They look like armadillos that have an extra layer of armor on them. Again, that's something that's new for us to even and think about the type of species and the identification that's involved with that. Some of the things that we do currently do. We've worked in the areas of trafficking with indigenous species. We've dealt with AIS or invasive species through pet stores. Those are generally the ones that have been identified. If they end up in our streams, our systems end up causing problem with indigenous species. We've dealt with those sort of things, but this picture here is shark fin. We already have existing regulation that deals with the trade of shark fin, and a loophole was taken out in the last legislative session that simply says you can't sell shark fin within our markets. So trafficking in some of these items are going to be obviously a bigger workload for us. I would have been a lot happier coming in here and telling you that I had a spending plan, but that's not the case. This year in the budget talks, funding for I-1401 is in the House budget. It's in the governor's budget, but there's no mention of that in the Senate budget. And so it's not done yet, but it's not looking very good. Obviously, the capacity to take on this new mission is a very big concern. We recognize that our mission is indigenous species. It always has been, but you don't want to water down that mission without additional resources. You really do need to find a way of building that capacity to investigate these things. And the bigger pieces, which I'll cover next, is what we plan to do right now. So we've got the ask, the governor's budget, there is $66,000 for the remaining of fiscal year 16. In fiscal year 17, there was an additional bump of $434,000. That would have been an incredible start. And so let's talk about that. With any new initiative that becomes law and the change in the landscape, there has to be a component of training, relating with the public, the outreach and education for this new law. And you don't want to simply jump right in and start looking through Craigslist and making a whole lot of cases related to this where somebody simply has passed away in a family and wants to move, wants to sell some of those articles that are listed within the statute. We want to do a really good job of educating the public, notifying them of the change of the landscape, and give them the opportunity to ask questions. Individuals is one thing, but it's also an industry. This has fingers into industry. So you have appraisers that want to know what the new landscape is. You have auctioneers that want to know whether or not they can legally sell these items. They want to know what those particular exceptions to the law are and how do they prove that to a law enforcement entity. So on the enforcement side, we're going to need some additional help with training using U.S. Fish and Wildlife. They have a warehouse in Redmond, Washington that's loaded with articles that we can take a look at. We can make some identification cards, something to carry with us out in the field, and also talk about how state law and federal law mesh together. And if really, in order to be effective in this world, we're going to have those relationships with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, NOAA, and some of our other partners. We have a very good opportunity that's coming up in April. Our membership with NACLEC, which is the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs, they have an academy that is built for building future leadership. It's almost like the FBI National Academy, where you go get into all kinds of leadership type concepts. This academy has been opened up to other nations. And so we will have some leaders from the continent of Africa, several other places near India, where they're on the front lines and they can kind of give us a better perspective of what they're seeing and possibly build those bridges between the federal effort and those that we can start here in the state of Washington. So that's where we're headed right now. Again, step one is to make sure that the public knows about the change in the landscape. We're going to be working with Bruce Bodka at our central media folks to update our webpage. We're going to produce some materials that are usable for industry as well as the public. We're going to get the message out as much as we possibly can of this new law change. And then we're going to start working on the other pieces. As we take our baby steps towards actually doing some of these investigations, we're going to look at it very holistically and how we can fit into the overall effort, and also look for the ultimate goal of getting additional funding for that effort, and so it doesn't steer us away from our overall current mission. I'll go ahead and open up for some questions. Mike has got a few things that he wants to update you on while we're on the subject of protected species. He's got some information on some well grant opportunities that we've just became aware of.
Yeah. Chief, I think this is an area that we can, the department can build bridges with a lot of the public that we hadn't engaged with before. So I think getting this word out is a very proactive thing, because it does I mean, just when you thought things couldn't get any more complicated. But yeah. This is an international reality, and it is one that does engender a lot of emotion from the public that would traditionally not interact with us. So I think us taking the high ground on this and a leadership role could be very a positive.
Thank you.
Other questions? No. Yes?
I'll just ask. I guess a lot to be determined yet about what we'll be able to do, but since CITES is a matter of federal law, we would do investigations and then refer cases to for federal prosecution.
Well, you have to realize that on the federal side, they're mostly on the import-export side of things, international trade. Mm-hmm. As part of President Obama's resolution, he has given direction and guidance to U.S. Fish and Wildlife to address these issues abroad. And so there are a number of U.S. Fish and Wildlife agents that have been stationed in Tanzania, India, across the globe. And so it's not necessarily that we would be doing the exact same job. It's more of internally the commerce that goes on here in Washington State, as you can imagine. We have a number of ports of entry as well as SeaTac Airport, all those type of shipping channels. U.S. Fish and Wildlife does a lot of work on international transportation, but we would be looking at it from in-state commerce.
I think that the legal structure allows both the federal and the state governments to control the unlawful possession and trafficking of these species, and we are going to have to complement one another. The relevance of CITES as it relates to our law is that it lists out some species that can't be possessed under the state of Washington, in the state of Washington, under our state law. Certainly if it crosses a state line or it crosses an international boundary, there's a federal nexus. But we don't need that to do our job. And one of the things that Chief Crown's really focused on here is initiatives are great, but if you don't have good, solid strategies, then they're pretty much worthless. And we want to be less in the inventory business, particularly if it's existing inventory that's been laying around for a century. And we want to be more involved in the actual poaching and exchange of these species, as well as some of our own that fuel a global market. And so as we get into some of this stuff, we're going to encounter people that also trade in some critters that, you know, are indigenous to North America or to the state of Washington. So we have an opportunity to, as the chief suggested, through NACLAC or other organizations and relationships, to open up communication lines that we didn't have, because the bad guy's best friend is a border and multiple jurisdictions in between the act and where the item might be possessed, because there's a lot of confusion and we struggle with connecting the dots.
Well, one thought that comes to my mind, I'm not a big fan of initiatives. Sometimes very bad laws, well-intentioned, but not very well-designed laws come out of the initiative process. But it is what it is. And I just think if we're going to prosecute these kinds of cases in state court, when we've already got a problem with state courts taking seriously any of our serious fish and wildlife offenses, let alone having a case brought in that's about trading in an old piece of ivory that somebody innocently purchased or was given, I just doubt that our state court system is going to be very receptive. Judges, my sense is judges are not going to want these cases. But that's my editorial comment.
Well, I think that we're going to have to use some good sense in terms of how we pursue this. And ultimately, and I think the initiative supporters are in the same place, what we're really after here is to stop the poaching currently of these critters and the exchange of those animals and animal parts. And that's why the chief's focused on getting some revenue in. Otherwise, we're probably going to be relegated to answering questions and maybe taking inventory and not really doing anything regarding the poaching piece. But you're right. I think we know what a priority case would look like and what it wouldn't look like at first glance. But there's some other issues, you know, and we can't change the elements of the initiative for 2 years. But as the chief mentioned earlier, one concern is the red list. Well, who certifies that? You know, we have a sense of how things get on the list, but do they come off? Is it amended? Are stocks reassessed? Are populations reassessed? And is it up to date? We have to prove in a criminal court that beyond a reasonable doubt, this critter that we said is on that list is really on that list. And you can't just say, I looked it up on the internet. Somebody's got to be able to fly in from the IUCN, whether it's from Sweden or a regional office, and go, yes, I certify that this Mako shark population is listed as vulnerable today on the list, and this person possessed a part of that animal within the time frame that it was on that list. So we got a lot of stuff to figure out, and he's making us figure it out.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to share a little good news. It's hard to come by these days, but the enforcement program was awarded a NOAA grant for $1.1 million, which expands and extends the work that we've been doing with orca whale protection. So another vulnerable or species in trouble. And that money will be used to support an officer over a 3-year period, take care of our vessel that we rely on to conduct those patrols. Also, about $100,000, I think it's $24,000 a year, plus a $40,000 piece one time goes to Soundwatch to do the great work that they do. And also help support the trails for whales. I probably butchered what it's really called, but the viewing platforms and that sort of thing, and also build outreach material. And Sergeant Russ Mullins was very instrumental in increasing our profile with the whale community and making this agency relevant in terms of protecting those critters. And I think it's recognized that this agency has done a lot of positive work. And so, doggone it, we ought to take credit for those new calves, you know. But anyway, he deserves a lot of credit for the work he's done with the non-governmental organizations and NOAA. And thanks to NOAA for this badly needed money.
Yeah, I second that on the whale trail. That has possibilities of being a very good tourist draw. And I, again, a little marketing, but it also has the opportunity to be a great partnering opportunity. So our marketing can be done by others as well. But I was talking to a group a couple weeks ago, and they were talking all about that. I didn't really know about it. So I went up and looked at it, but I think it's good. I think this is all good news. And I heard today we're going to name one of the orca calves Mike. Mikey.
Perfect, sir.
Any other comments? Well,
thank you all.
Thank you. And, that's not bad. We're only 9 minutes off. Yeah. So thank you all, and we will reconvene tomorrow at 8:00.